Yeah. One back, yeah. Two back, three back. Okay. Right, let's just check the signal level. Signal level's good. Okay, right. Right, so we're going to start off. Right, so basically we're going to do the two little coverage quickly and then what we've been playing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. So, right, is everyone ready?
Yep.
Or is Malk still reading the thing?
Yeah, I'm ready, but I can read that as well.
Yeah. All right, I'm not going to say what order, because I want you to fuck this up again. You've balls this up 2 weeks in a row, I want you to do it again. Hello everyone and welcome to the RMI Fusion Cast, where we sit here and we talk about games. At least some people were a bit critical of it last time, but anyway, I'm Tony.
I'm Will.
I'm Mal.
And I'm Andrew.
Hey, no crossovers! We got it right this time. Right, so yep, we're back for our third episode. We're going to be changing things around a little bit this time. A bit slightly different layout, which Malk recommended.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep, so we're going to be going this one. But first, let's have a few updates on stories we thought were funny. First of all, we mentioned last fortnight about the SimCity incident due to the fact that they were giving away games for free as an apology. So, yeah, so they were giving away copies of Battlefield and Mass Effect and basically games that everybody's got already. What do you reckon? Do you reckon it's a cheap cop-out, guys, or do you reckon they're just being genuine?
Depends on whether you've got the games or not, really. Yeah, if you've got all of them, then it's a cheap cop-out, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
all I can think of, really, you know that South Park episode when they did the Mick out of BP? I think they should put a picture of that person saying, "We're sorry, here's some free games."
Malk?
Yeah, I think it is a bit of a cop-out, but I don't think they'll make that stupid mistake with future games. You know, like, say, FIFA or something, by having that online only, because they can't get away with it. People won't put up with stuff like that, really.
Oh, it's true. And you look the where EA were basically saying, oh, but the fans wanted a mass multiplayer online game. Yeah, by the amount of complaints you got back, I'm pretty sure that's not what they wanted.
And guess what?
Yeah, play it for a start.
Yeah, exactly. Go on, Will.
Apparently, EA says they don't want to be the worst company in America again for the second time in a row.
Well,
who does?
Yeah, it's true, but they're not doing a very good job of it, are they?
Not really, no.
Yeah, so we'll leave them to that one and we'll wait for EA's next classic mistake. Also, talking about always-on connections, Will, what about that tweet that came through?
Well, apparently some guy from Microsoft called Adam Orr tweeted on his Twitter account saying basically that the new Xbox is going to be like online all the time. Well, that's just the rumor. If I don't know if it's true or not, I hope it's not, but if it is, I'm not going to touch and I'm not going to buy that Xbox. Why should people play a single player game online all the time?
Yeah, this is what they said. Is like, didn't you learn anything from SimCity?
Or Diablo.
Well, let's be fair. Let's be fair with Diablo, yeah?
Yeah.
Diablo is a multiplayer game.
Yeah.
Yeah, SimCity isn't. But what do you reckon, good or bad idea for always online console?
Bad idea.
Go on, Malk, why do you think that?
Because if your internet connection goes down, you can't play on it. What if you haven't got an internet connection? Not everyone has.
True.
And it's just, it'll make it a complete, you know, joke, basically. A lot of people won't be able to play the games that they've bought and stuff. Because it's constantly connecting to the internet. So, like, I mean, the internet does go down quite a bit.
Yeah.
As you've heard on this podcast with Tony cutting out already.
Shut up!
You know, it's not 100% reliable. So having something that's got to permanently be online just doesn't work.
That's true. Okay, Andrew, your opinions on it?
Yeah, I think it's... I don't think it's good. It's good, because like Malk said, not everybody's internet connections are perfect. We know that for sure. I don't think it's a good idea. I mean, it's sort of like your PlayStation or something whereby you can go online, but to have it constantly online all the time to use it, no, I don't agree with that. I'm sorry, but I don't.
No, Will?
Well, like I agree with Andrew and Malk. I just think it's a stupid idea and kind of basically, well, I'd rather just invest my money into the PlayStation 4 or the Wii U. That's where I'm going to put my money.
Yep. Like I say, I think it's a really bad idea. And if Microsoft are going to be pushing for this, it's going to be very, very bad,
yeah.
Put it that way. And there's still no clear-cut sign whether the new Xbox is going to block second-hand games.
Yes.
That's one thing that I think Sony are trying to do with the PlayStation 4, aren't they?
Yeah. They went against it, didn't they? They're not going to do it. You're going to be able to play second-hand games.
And what I wanted to say about that as well is they've still got the curse of the third console as well.
Yes, I definitely agree with you, mate. The curse of the third console is very rife, and it's looking bad if they're going to carry on playing like this. My own honest opinion, well, let's just hope it doesn't come back and bite Microsoft in the arse.
One day.
But I am hoping alongside it that there's part of me that wants it to, there's part of me that doesn't.
Hmm.
That's just me being an objectionable gamer, so...
Yeah.
Okay, right, final little bit of news. The Resident Evil 6 / Left 4 Dead 2 crossover, exclusive for the PC. Who's excited about that?
Yay.
Yeah. It wouldn't be much to me. It wouldn't mean much to me, let's put it this way.
Well, you'll be able to take advantage of the Left 4 Dead part.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Hmm. Seeing Coach kick the Resident Evil zombies.
Oh, yeah, it's true. But the one thing I do like about this whole thing that's done, PC side to it, is Capcom have basically offered out the...
Valve.
It's breached heavily.
Well, one thing I'm really going to give credit for is Capcom. Capcom, you did a very good job putting it on Steam, not Origin.
Yeah, very good. And also, the Resident Evil 6 characters for the Left 4 Dead 2 side are going to be created by the fans.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Yeah. So they're giving back to the modding community,
exactly,
and giving their chance to shine, which is something which some companies just aren't doing nowadays.
Nope. Steve, nope. You are one hell of a good internet buyer thingamajig, whatever you call it.
Yeah. They're a good service provider.
Exactly,
games.
Yeah. Good service.
Yeah.
Right, so, yeah.
What I do like Left 4 Dead 2, I do think it's really good.
Mm.
The thing I don't like about Left 4 Dead, I don't think it's got really much of a storyline. You know, it don't go through a story, but it is a very, very enjoyable, very playable game. It's good multiplayer. I mean, I've played it quite a few times with you's lot, and I do actually like it.
But the thought of playing Resident Evil 6 characters in it.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. But, I mean, I'm not much for Resident Evil 6 myself. I played the demo, and I didn't think much to it. I thought it was trying to be Gears of War more than anything.
That's just Chris's game, so. But no, all in all, but... Like I did say with you guys, somebody pick up the phone because I called it. I said to you guys that the community do that, didn't they?
Yep.
Yeah.
See? I called that one straight down the middle. So that was good. Okay, let's just move on quickly. Okay, so who wants to say what they've been playing of lately?
Me.
Gun and Will, what have you been playing?
I've been... I completed Bioshock Infinite, the latest of the game in the Bioshock series.
Good. For our listeners, any good recommendations?
Highly recommend. If you're a Bioshock fan, do not pass this game down. It is well worth the money.
If
you also a hardcore fan back in the day, there's a thing called 99 mode that you can play it the way that you played it back in 1999.
They're talking back at the System Shock 2 era,
yes,
aren't they?
That's what basically it is.
Oh,
so
very
nice. If you were a fan of System Shock 2... There you go.
Okay. Andrew, what game's been taking your time up?
I've actually started playing Ni No Kuni.
Long laugh.
Yeah, I started playing it a couple of weeks ago. In fact, I'm playing it for a couple of days now. But I've just got up to the bit whereby you've climbed Old Smokey. And there's the bad guy at the top. Moltan, I think his name is. He's a tough git, he is. Yeah, and I've just been basically trying to go and levelling up just to try and kill him.
It's a long tour in that game.
Yeah.
But no, you play well. But a recommendation, would you recommend it?
If you love Studio Ghibli and you love the RPGs, it's worth it. It's worth every penny. It's so far one of the best games I've probably played on the PS3. It's
nice.
Oh yes.
Good. Malk, what have you been playing, mate?
I haven't really been playing anything lately. I've been too busy with things. The only thing I have been playing is games on my Android phone, you know, like emulated games.
Mm-hmm.
I played, I don't know whether anyone's seen it, there's a video actually on some that guy's YouTube channel I subscribed to tonight, but I did actually download this game before then. It's a Commodore 64 version of Spike, which is a Vectrex game, if anyone doesn't know. I know Andrew does.
Oh,
but,
yes.
Yeah, it's worth checking out. That guy, what's his name? He's got a strange name.
Polar Ventress,
yeah. He's got a video of it on there. And I actually found the game before then and downloaded it, but I did watch his video tonight because I've subscribed to him. And it is very, very impressive. And especially considering the Commodore 64 don't do vector graphics on that, does it? Whereas Spectrum and Amstrad can do them, but they've done a really good job with that. It does look pretty much the same as the Vectrex one.
I'd have to give that a look then, because the Vectrex one is superb.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got quite good controls, considering it's only got one button as well.
Yeah.
You know, that works quite well.
Very nice. Alright, good. Yeah. For me, my time has been hooked on Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed. I've been really addicted to that game. An awful lot. It's a really great sequel to the original. And if you like Mario Kart-style racing games, I really do recommend it.
Oh, yeah, I do as well.
And also, you just can't wait for Bayonetta to be a playable character, can't you?
Oh, I would love that if they made Bayonetta a playable character. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sega, for creating one of the sexiest female characters ever.
But there's
multiple, and with the inclusion of boat race scenes during the track and flight as well, it really does make a big difference. There's so much thing, but if anyone you want to check out my review, it's on our site at www.rmifusion.com, along with various other reviews about all sorts of gaming stuff, which we gladly sit there and give to you in abundance. So, like I say, you've had the site, so please come along and join us and give us some of your own opinions on what you think of what our videos and what we say. Right, time to separate the show now. Me and Malk, we will be talking about Duke Nukem Forever in a second. And later in the show, Andrew and Will will take over, and they will be talking to us about the first few Pokemon games.
Yep.
So I will lead us in for some kick-ass Duke Nukem music, and me and Malk will be back in a second. Right, yes, so we're here to talk about Duke Nukem Forever. Now, this was a game that was met with pretty much negative reactions from the big guys on top. But for me and you, we actually don't think it deserved the slating it got. Would you agree with me, mate?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about this before on another show where I was a guest on once. And, it got completely slated in the reviews, basically because, it's not Modern Warfare and all this crap, like, is the main thing that they was comparing it to. It's not even the same type of game, and let's remember, Duke Nukem was out years before any of the Call of Duty games.
It was very, very true. But let's touch over on the gameplay and the storyline to it. Well, the storyline seems to be a kind of repeat from Duke Nukem 3D, doesn't it? The aliens are coming back. And yeah, it's pretty simplistic, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and basically Duke Nukem has to, you know, save Earth from the aliens, and, you know, it's got the same sort of crude humour, it's got a lot of,
innuendo.
Like, at the start, you can pick shit out of the toilet and throw it at the wall and stuff.
Aww.
And it is, as I said before on the other podcast, it's not a game that's intended for children, because it's got nudity, you know, lots of bad language, crude humour. It's also got the longest development time of any game ever, because originally it was going to be, I can't even remember, about 14 years, I reckon, in development.
It was, but it went round a lot of companies. What I think it is, I think when 2K took it, they basically built the game from the ground up very quick. because there would be nothing of the original things what we saw all that time ago that would be salvageable or even usable.
No, because the updates in, obviously, the technology with the graphics and everything. I think originally there was going to be a port on a PS2, and obviously, you know, there was better things out then, because the game took so bloody long to come out, so they didn't even release it on a PS2, did they?
And no, they didn't.
There's a trailer with the original one on YouTube, what it was going to be like, and obviously it's nothing like that now.
It's not. But I personally think they brought it up there. A lot of people were very, very cynical of its crude humour, but that's what makes Duke Nukem. Yeah, if you took away Duke Nukem's crudeness, his womanising ways, it just wouldn't be the same.
No, that's right. No, it'd ruin the game. If it's like with censoring it. I mean, with all the Duke Nukem games, the Nintendo 64 one, for instance, when they censor all the swearing and censor, you know, him going into strip clubs and going up to women, giving them money so they, you know, get their tits out.
Get the boobs out.
It basically takes off what Duke Nukem is, because that's the sort of a guy he is. He goes into all these dodgy places and does these, you know.
Yeah, but you've got to remember, Duke Nukem Forever, he owns his own bar now, so.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but no, but the Dukester has seen better days, in its opinion. But the gameplay itself, it does actually spin a little bit more on either side of it, because you've got the areas where you're shrunk down, you've got the little sort of karting sections as well. So they did bring a little difference of gameplay to the game in itself. So just to make it feel that little bit more difference. I would agree it's a bit linear than the others. It's still a good old-fashioned FPS shooter. And that's what a lot of people want nowadays, because the war front's all there, but how many games about the war can you make?
Well, it's the same with Call of Duty, to be totally honest, when they kept doing World War II, and you know what I mean, they just done it to death, didn't they? And that's why they started doing the Modern Warfare ones, and soon, well, people I would imagine are going to get sick of that in the end.
It's true.
How many times can you do the same shit over and over again without people getting pissed off of it?
Yeah, when you look at Duke Nukem Forever, it's got a slightly futuristic look to it, but then again, it's not.
No, that's right.
It's not, but like I say, it's a good old fashioned. I've nearly done it all on top skill level, and it is a challenge.
Well, I haven't completed it. I got stuck on it after so long and just couldn't find where to go. But unlike games like Call of Duty and that, you do have to actually explore on that, and I just, because I'm crap at, like, you know, I'll get lost in that and go around in circles and shit, got no sense of direction whatsoever. That's another reason why I don't drive, so yeah, I'll get lost on it, and that's why I haven't completed it.
But that is one of the main things. But like I say, once you get used to it, I do like the boss fights in particular, especially once you've taken their health down, you've got to run at them and then basically do a small quick time event to make sure they're dislodged, including the final encounter on that one. You actually have to bring him down several times and disarm him to a point where he basically just dies out eventually. But the other good side is the interactive environments are also pretty good, especially at the start of the game where you go drawing on the whiteboard.
Yeah, that's funny.
And what's the first thing you're doing when you start the game? Yeah, taking a piss.
Yeah. Why is it taking so long?
But you can actually hold it down to actually finish it, but it takes ages. Don't ask me why I did that. I just did. But like I say, the storyline, it's plain simple, Duke. The aliens are back, they want some revenge, and Duke's the only guy that can save us. But it works well. If you ask me, some of the levels, would you agree, they do require a bit of puzzle element to get you going, especially when you're in the hives.
And is that bit where you've got to move the statue and then run and jump over the top of it to get up to the other bit, and things like that?
Yeah, see, now you're using my one-liner. So it was good. It didn't deserve the slating it got.
No, it didn't. I think it was definitely a lot better than what reviews gave it. I think they just didn't give it a chance for a start, and as I say, it was being unfairly compared to Call of Duty, which it's not even that sort of game, really.
No, it's not. Let's talk about the looks of the games, because I pretty much think the game does look pretty good.
Yeah, the graphics are quite decent, but like I said before, they're nothing special. They're functional, rather. I mean, they are decent. They look definitely better than the graphics on, say, a certain franchise which uses the same graphics engine for fuck knows how many years. Mm. But we won't go into that again, because we'll get more bad reviews.
Yeah, I know, because we just can't help that one. But yeah, the graphics do the job nicely. I probably would say Duke's animation frames are a little clunky, but if they truly did have only to work with basically what they had, I reckon 2K did a pretty good job of getting it working and getting the game out. I do believe that they are going to be working on another Duke project in the future. But this would be good because it would be something they could create from square one.
Yeah.
So, and then of course, then they could build it from the ground up, and they could create a totally new Duke game. They were also supposed to be doing the original Duke Nukem games in the engine they used for Duke Nukem Forever, but that still didn't surface.
Well, you can get one of the levels, can't you, as a map on the multiplayer.
I try to remember. Yeah, I think one of them was redone. I think it was the first level.
Yeah, where you go in the cinema and that.
Yeah, and it's all been where you got cardboard cut out for pigs and there's barricades there now. Yeah, so yeah, it was pretty good how they did that. And the multiplayer is quite nice as well. I really don't mind the multiplayer. It's nice, simple. Get in there and just murder people online.
Yeah, it's more like a sort of old fashioned, you know, retro sort of.
But Doom Deathmatch.
Yeah, basically, or your GoldenEye sort of thing, ain't it? It's like it's not a multiplayer game like, say, where you've got to score lots of points and do all sorts of stupid shit. It's just kill everyone that's on there, basically.
Yeah, there is team-based games. Yeah, there is team-based. Yeah, there is. But like I say, who wants to play team-based when you want to be the Duke Nukem?
Yeah.
You want to be top Duke of the area. But what about the weapons? What do you reckon about the weapons side?
It's got some quite good weapons in it. But basically, a lot of them are like what's in the Duke Nukem games already. You know, the older Duke Nukem games. I do like, you know, what they've done with the game, though. It is good.
Yeah. They did reuse the original weapons from Duke Nukem 3D and then give them upgrades. But those weapons were fine enough as it is. I do agree with the slight limitations on how many you could carry. It started off with two, but then they increased it to four after a patch. But that, I reckon that was good in all aspects, because you don't want to be carrying too many guns. And I even found myself when I'm playing with Duke Nukem 3D, once I had the pistol, once I had the Ripper, I didn't use the pistol. Yeah, I very rarely use pipe bombs.
No.
Why use them when you got the rocket launcher?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and things like the freeze thrower were a pain in the butt to really get going anyway. You could end up freezing yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and the only real good one, I reckon, was the Devastator.
Yeah, the Devastator's good.
Yeah, very good. They did add a rail gun in. That was new to the series. As per rail guns in all franchises like this, it was inaccurate as hell. And yeah, that they never were any good. But if you want to play in the multiplayer, then I think one of the best levels is the Duke Burger level, where you're in the giant sized kitchen.
Yeah, that's pretty good, because it's got like one of them sort of like shop window dummies, but it looks sort of like Duke Nukem. And when you're playing it sometimes, like, well, when I first played that level, I thought it was someone and tried shooting it. But it is actually a dummy that's just standing there, ain't it?
Yeah, that's one of the things to put you off. And like I say, with that level, it's like, it's got the genuine hazards in it, things like the deep fryers and the microwaves.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, and I'm like thinking, it's like, it was constructive words, like, you can't run across the Hobbs without hurting yourself.
Mm.
And they put the rocket launcher in the microwave, but you feel a mug when you jump in to grab it, and then someone from a long distance pings a railgun shot and locks you in the microwave and basically microwaves you. So yeah, that was all. But do you remember you said that you weren't too good at games like that? But do you remember the guy that absolutely sucked while you was playing, and he was just literally just standing there while we all shot him to pieces?
Yeah, because I am shit at games like that. That's why I don't play multiplayer, really, because I'm crap at them.
Mm. But you don't mind if it's something to help you out, though?
No. Mm.
Also, there is a leveling system on it as well for the multiplayer, where you could get your achievements in killing X amount of people, doing people in this amount of time, or killing people in this amount of ways. And then basically you've got your like little home.
Yeah.
And then you can basically just walk around and be big-headed about it, so just so you can show off your achievements and the many females that are in the game.
Oh, that's something I forgot. It's got, in Duke Nukem, one of the levels where it's in his house, it's got a pinball machine and you can play on it.
Yeah, the actual there's actually an achievement for that, if I remember
right.
Yeah,
the ball's a steel pinball machine, ain't it?
Mm-hmm. Which is another reference back to...
Duke Nukem, it's in the cinema, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was referenced further back as well. And of course, Duke wouldn't be Duke without his one-liners and various other odds and ends. And it's a good thing they got John St. John back in to do the voice for Duke.
Yeah, that's right, because if they would have got someone else, it just wouldn't have been the same.
No, it wouldn't. John St. John is been the only person that's ever done Duke's voice, and I just don't see why he wouldn't do it any other time. I reckon he jumped at the chance to bring Duke back to life again.
Well, I'll be totally honest, I've never even heard of him.
But yeah, I'm not sure if he's done anything famous. So, but if he's just a voice actor, he's probably done other stuff. But
yeah,
I remember there was once a video on the net where he was at a convention with Team Four Star, and they had him reading from 50 Shades of Grey. have you not seen that video?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, for anybody who's not seen it, go to YouTube and then put down there, John St. John reads 50 Shades of Grey with Team Four Star. It's funny as hell.
It's like you're saying about voice actors, though. The guy who does the voice for The Mask in Splatterhouse, he does the voice for Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, scary, isn't it? Well, we'll be covering Splatterhouse pretty soon,
yeah,
won't we?
In the future show, yeah.
Yep, so there'll be something else for the people to listen forward to. So sounds, yeah, the music's good. It's got the classic Duke Nukem theme tune on it as well, so all nicely jazzed up. But I don't think there's any of the main sound pieces which really, really makes it stick out and makes you say, hey, look at me, I'm fantastic. And you'll be sitting there like, yeah, right. On that one. But... On an overall, what's your honest opinion of the game?
Well, I bought it pretty much when it came out, and I wasn't disappointed with it. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I haven't played it loads. I've played it quite a lot, though.
Mm.
But yeah, it's definitely... I reckon you could probably get it cheap now, though.
Yeah, I think it's only something like $9.99 on Steam now, so...
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. I mean, like I say, I don't always take the reviews seriously, you know, professional reviews. Because a lot of the times, especially with some of them, they just get paid off.
Yeah, we know that. Bribes
and, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And the only way you can really experience these games is by literally doing it yourself and getting the whole entire feel for it on your own. My own opinion, yes, the game was unfairly hit upon, in my own honest opinion. I know Guru Larry didn't like the game. And yeah, the game has its faults. It's not without its faults. It is linear. I reckon a bit more exploration could have gone well, because the original Duke Nukem 3D was fairly explore the levels, where you had to go around, especially with finding the key cards.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and that is a little something that was missing in this one. So, I reckon also... If they could have just gone for a bit more on that, then that would have been okay. Hell, I would have been happy if they did it levels like the original Duke Nukem 3D was. That would have been fun.
Yeah.
If that's it. And then just tell the storyline that way. As for it goes, they could have... How can you really portray Duke as ever? He's one of the best anti-heroes there really is. As I say, he saves the world, but he's a womanizing dirtbag in the essence of it as well. Mind you, I don't think you picked up the DLC, did you?
No, I didn't, no.
Yeah, the DLC was short but sweet, and actually brought back his very first nemesis, I believe it was Dr. Proton.
Oh, right. What game's that out of, then?
That's off the very, very first Duke Nukem, the platform one.
I think I may have played some remake of it or something, but I've never actually played the original version of it.
Mm.
I've seen it. I know it don't look very good nowadays.
Mm. But they decided to say, hey, why not? Well, the DLC basically evolves around a plot to create multiple Duke clones of Duke, and Doc Proton is apparently still alive and was behind it. So you get a face-off against an older nemesis again, which I reckon is good and shows a little bit of conceded backstory for the series and gives you a little bit of history on people who never played the original platform game because they've only just recently become available on the consoles, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's good that one. And Duke has been had an evolution. He's gone from a 2D scrolling platformer into the 3D FPS era. And I'd like to see. Well, if they could put a lot of effort like they did with Borderlands, I reckon 2K probably could come up with a pretty good Duke Nukem title in the future. So that's something I'd be hoping for.
Yeah, it'd be good if they just basically, like you said, they were going to do remake the original using the game engine of Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah, and then bring us a proper little sequel with a new threat to it all, and something else to really let Duke get his teeth into on that one. So he could go out there and he could kick ass and chew bubble gum, but be all out of gum.
he nicks all his one-liners, you know, pretty much. That's out of They Live, and when he says "Hail to the King, baby," that's out of Army of Darkness. And I think he even says Groovy as well, which is out of Evil Dead 2.
Yeah, exactly. But they're classic one-liners.
Oh, yeah,
they are
classic, yeah.
Mm. So, our own honest opinion from the RMI Future team, the game was underrated and unfairly reviewed. It's cheap now. If you look about, you probably pick up for a couple of quid from your local game exchange. I say if you want to have a nice little no-brainer shooter, then Duke will fit the bill quite nicely. But if you're looking for something that's tactical alongside that, it's not going to be your cup of tea.
No, it's not Modern Warfare.
No, that's definitely not. It's Duke Warfare, and Duke Warfare is awesome. Okie dokies, right. We're going to be handing you over to Will and Andrew now, who will be going over the Pokemon games. So for now, this is Tony saying signing out.
Yeah, bye from me.
Yep, and we'll be back after the others have finished their section.
Hello everybody, welcome to the retro part of this podcast. I'm Will.
I'm Andrew.
And today's retro game we're talking about is the immensely popular Pokemon game, which is known as Pocket Monsters in Japan. Now the game was developed by Game Freaks, and it came out first in Japan of February of 1996, which was actually Pokemon Red and Green. Now you're probably wondering why there are two versions of the same game. We'll get right that to one a little later on. It came out in America, came out as Pokemon Red and Blue, and also over here as well, same versions. Pokemon Blue was released in Japan, but you only can get that by pre-order through a mail thing. But they did release it in retail stores in later, about 1999. And also there was a yellow version of it, which is known as Special Pikachu Edition, which is basically based on the Pokemon anime at the time.
Yeah, that's the one I've played the most.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that was also what I mostly played as well, also in Blue as well. So anyway, let's talk about the plot of the game, shall we? Well, plot of the game is that you're in this region of the Pokemon universe called Kanto, and you take control of this 10-year-old boy that basically you can basically name. Now, the funny thing is, the default name for this main character is actually called Red, surprisingly. But if you actually first got it and you played, you probably would have chosen Ash for some reason.
Yeah,
The anime actually came out at the same time. So, yeah I'm pretty guilty of choosing the Ash name. And also, basically, you can also choose you also get a rival in this game that you will meet throughout the entire game, which basically you can choose Gary if you wish, like I did. But his funny thing is, his default name is Blue, or you can name him pretty much anything if you wish. So after doing all that, you make your way to Professor Oak's lab, and you will choose your starter Pokemon, which the three starter Pokemons everybody known as Squirtle, Charmander, and Bulbasaur. As soon as you choose your Pokemon, your rival will choose his Pokemon, and as soon as you've done your battling, you just go off into the Pokemon world while battling the 8 gym leaders. As soon as actually you've done that, you will go to the Indigo Plateau, beat the Elite Four, and you will go and become the Pokemon Champion. Now, what did you think of the graphics of the game, Andrew?
I think graphically, for Game Boy, certainly, it looked, I mean, they may have been small, but they suited the Game Boy perfectly. Definitely. And a nice little touch that, is obviously if you play the game on a... play the game on the Game Boy Color, you get the enhanced colorful graphics and stuff. And also, if you play it on the Super Game Boy and the Super Nintendo, you get a nice colorful border, which I think. At least you got that with the yellow version.
Yes. Actually, Pokemon actually had some Super Game Boy enhancements in the game as well. Basically, you have a Super Game Boy, you plug that in, and you will get, like, your Pokemon will be in colour, and your health bar will be in colour as well. And every time you go into a different town, it will change to various colours. Like, for example, Lavender Town will just be all purple.
That's right, and yeah.
But funny thing is, like, sorry, Andrew, but if you plug the Pokemon game into the Game Boy Color, you don't get the Super Game Boy enhancements, which is a bit of a shame, really.
Yeah.
But also, if anyone bought the game when it first came out in the 90s, because basically the anime was out at the same time, they didn't get time to change the Pokemon like the anime counterparts. But they did that in Pokemon Yellow, so, yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
And also, what really interests me about the graphics, really, I'm actually quite surprised. Basically, the game sold really, really well, despite being end of its lifespan of the Game Boy. Because that time, the Game Boy was going out. The Game Boy Color was already out, weren't it?
I actually remember it was like one of the last black and white titles. You know.
Yes.
It was like one of the last titles, and I know where the box just said Game Boy on it. It was very weird to see that at the time when Game Boy Color games was just starting to come out.
Yeah, because about that time, by like 1999, the Game Boy Color over here was about almost a year old. So
yeah.
I'm surprised, but it sold fantastically, really, really well, despite being at the very end of the Game Boy's lifespan. Made the Game Boy a bestseller game. And also, we'll go on to the next stuff about the gameplay. Now, the gameplay has a type of, like, an RPG style to it. Because what you do when you pick your starter Pokemon, you have to basically level your Pokemon up. Because basically, you will have to fight trainers. Because also, if you fight and beat the trainers, they'll also give you money. But if you want to level up your Pokemon, you have to fight Pokemon in the wild. So as soon as you go through the tall grass, Pokemon will show up, you fight that Pokemon. Defeat it, and you get the experience points.
And so, yeah. I think the only thing is, obviously, because you can't see them coming, the battles are often pretty random.
Yeah, like in a traditional RPG, like in Final Fantasy, when you're walking around,
and all of a sudden you're in a battle.
But that's how you level up. And also, if you're planning to catch all 150 Pokemon, well, this is where the two versions come in. Now, basically, the reason why they released two versions of the game is because some Pokemon are only in one version and in the other version. So, for example, really, if you wanted a Vulpix, but that's not in that version, you have to go and get transferred on the other version.
Hmm.
And also, this is probably the only game on the Game Boy, to my knowledge, that made full use of the Game Boy Game Link. Do you remember the Game Boy Game Link? Remember that?
Yeah, the old Link App sort of thing, wasn't it? It was normally used for multiplayer games, wasn't it?
Yes. But with Pokemon, it had a really unique twist, because basically when you have two versions of the same game, you can trade Pokemon. Now, there was something else unique about this as well. For example, if you wanted a Golem, you have to trade your Graveler, and if you trade your Graveler, he will evolve into a Golem.
Hmm.
So basically, there are only some Pokemon that will evolve by training, by trade.
Hmm.
And that was one of the unique aspects about Pokemon. But also, some Pokemon will evolve by certain levels up, but certain Pokemon will level up by certain stones, like a Moonstone, Fire, Leaf, Water, and Thunder, for example, really. If you want to get like a Nidoking, you have to use a Moonstone on its middle evolve form. If you want a Raichu, use a Thunderstone and Pikachu.
Yeah.
And what else? What was unique about the game? Basically, like if your Pokemon gets injured and they faint, you can go to the Pokemon Center and get them all charged up. Also, there's a Pokemon Mart there. You can collect, like antidotes and potions and all like that. And also, you can pick up Pokeballs as well, because while you're on your travels, you will need to pick up more Pokemon, because the other aspect of the gameplay of the game is that certain Pokemon are weak to certain elements. For example, water is strong against fire. Wind attacks are strong against grass types. Thunder can do a lot of damage to a water Pokemon. So various gym leaders do use a certain theme. For example, like Brock, he has a rock theme. So basically, if you started off with Squirtle, you'd be able to defeat him very easily.
Yeah.
But as you go on, really, it is a very, for an RPG, it's a really good RPG. What in a way?
Oh yeah. It is a really, really, really good one. Really good one. It's certainly one I remember putting a few hours into. Going around catching all the old Pokemon and things. So it's definitely one worth checking out.
It is probably one of the Pokemon I would really check out, really. We go to Andrew.
Basically, if you start with which version to get, basically any of them will do, but yellow's a good one to start with, because obviously, yes. I mean, that was the one I started off with as well, so.
Now, speaking about Pokemon Yellow, it was more of like the special version of the Pokemon game. For example, like Crystal is the special version of Gold and Silver. Now, basically, Pokemon Yellow, also known as Special Pikachu Edition, was basically a anime theme game, because they've changed the Pokemon sprites to their anime counterparts, and also said of starting out with a you start out with a Squirtle, Bulbasaur, Charmander, except you start out with a Pikachu instead.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's one thing I do remember.
Because originally you were going to start out as an Eevee, but your rival basically kicks you to the side and nicks it, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he's such a little bastard, isn't he?
Frick, Mark.
Yeah.
But the good thing is every time you kick ass, basically, he's supposed to be the world's greatest Pokemon master, but you can just bitch slap him in time to get lost.
Oh.
I just feel sorry for Professor Roar having him as a grandchild.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
So basically, the sounds of the game are actually really, really good, because one of the things I do like about the sounds of the game is that when a time of Pokemon appears, it always has its own unique trone.
It has its own unique sound, doesn't it?
And also, everybody might hum sometimes, like, the music in the game is very memorable as well. Like, the
Oh, yes. Yeah, the music is one thing that really stands out as well. Everything from the opening title music and stuff, it's really catchy and memorable. I'm played a Pokemon game for quite some time now, but even I've still got the main theme in my head going around at the moment.
I my head as well.
I love how each and every single area has its own. I know it's been done before, but I like how it's got its own unique music. sort of thing. Yeah. So sometimes you can just tell where you are by listening to the music.
Yeah. Mm. Or just like, yeah. Oh, this is basically the city you're supposed to go to and all that. But they did a fantastic job with the music of the game as well. Most of the time, when I was playing Game Boy, I always play with the sound down. For some reason, every time you play a Game Boy with the sound down, it did actually save a lot of batteries.
Mm. I think obviously because of the obviously it's not outputting as much volume, is it? I think one thing I quite liked about the that Pokemon Yellow as well was the little bit of speech at the start.
They actually got some sound. The Pikachu actually got used some of the sound clips from the anime as well. Mm-hmm. Not like the best quality, but you can actually. They did a really good job with it.
That's right, yeah. Because I remember when I first tried it, I was like, oh my god, yeah, it really came out the speakers. Yeah, it was like, Pikachu! I was like, oh my god. And then you press start, it goes, Pika!
Actually, speaking about Pokemon, it was actually the first Pokemon game to actually have your Pokemon out of your Pokeball following you around.
Yeah, that's one thing I do remember. So I remember seeing my little Pikachu walking around with me and stuff.
But they never really used it that much. The only games they used it for was Yellow was the first one to use it. Mm. They didn't use it for Gold. They didn't use it for Silver. They didn't use it for Crystal. They didn't use it for Ruby, Sapphire, or Emerald. I think they started to reuse it in the remake of Gold, Heart Gold, and Soul Silver.
Mm.
And I think they did it again in Platinum, I believe. And they've also done it again in Black and Black 2 and White as well. Because they rarely use it. I play all the Pokemon games and they've rarely used it.
Yeah, that's a weird one. Because the highlight of getting your Pokemon to follow you around and stuff, because it saves a load of like Pokeballs and stuff, doesn't it? And
but it's pretty unique.
Well, yeah.
It's like in later.
They probably just can be bothered to program the bit where they're following you around and stuff, probably, but. Mm.
But it's like in some Pokemon games, like in Crystal, they introduced the animation. You know, when you see the Pokemon, they do a little animation.
They
brought that in Crystal. They didn't use it for Sapphire and Ruby, but they brought that back in for Emerald for some reason. I don't know why. Weird how they do it, really, with Pokemon games. They introduce something, and you don't see it for a while, then you see it again after a bit. It's weird.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And also, another game we would recommend as well is Pokemon Stadium. Now, when you bought Pokemon Stadium, you get this transfer pack thing that came with it. And also you could plug in your Pokemon game, and also you could play your Pokemon game on your Nintendo 64.
And also any Pokemon you catch in the Game Boy game, you could import them into Pokemon Stadium, like their current state level and status and things, and actually fight them in battle.
See them
come alive in 3D. Hmm.
But also, the funny thing is, if all your Pokemon are level 100 in the Pokemon game, if you use them against the Elite Four, their Pokemon will be 100 as well on the Pokemon Stadium game.
That's interesting. I suppose it makes it more of a challenge.
Yeah, it kind of does, really. But also, everybody used the Missing Known cheat, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so.
yeah, infamous Pokemon glitch called the Missing Known glitch. Basically, what you do, you talk to the old man, and you go to a Cinnabar Island and go up and down until you find this Missing Known thing and run away, and you'll get like Infinity Master Balls or Rare Candy.
Hey, yeah. Actually, I'm talking about which, there's something really I didn't mention about Pokemon Yellow, and that was how you obtain, was it Mew?
Now, Mew was actually the only way you could obtain Mew, well, really, legitimately, was going to these Nintendo events, weren't it?
Yeah, so, yeah, I remember reading about this. You go to the event, and then you switch on your Game Boy, and then they transfer like a save over or something, or a bit of code that goes to your save, and you get access to your Mew.
Yeah. No, they just transfer it.
That's right, yeah.
Because the creator never told Nintendo he actually programmed in the game. There's a glitch you can perform in Red and Blue that you can make Mew appear, because technically he was programmed in the game. So perform that glitch, you'll be able to get Mew.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, because apparently he's actually in the game. He's in your cartridge, but he doesn't actually make an appearance. Like, yeah. And of course, the thing is, nowadays, so... nowadays, I think the only real way to unlock Mew on Pokemon Yellow and stuff, I think, is to use an Action Replay cheat code.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can do it that way if you want, but basically, yeah, it's pretty good because, like, you know, I know it's like using Bleach is cheating, but it's like the Venn thing is non-existent anymore, so how are you going to get hold of a Mew?
That's right, yeah.
So you turn around to me and say, well, you're cheating. Well, it's like 2013, and none of these events, well, happened anymore for the original game, so...
Technically, it's not really a cheat, is it? It's the only way you can get... Yeah, sometimes you can only get some characters by using a cheat.
If you want all 150 Pokemon, yeah, you have to do it that way.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Because certain Pokemon are only on certain versions, so if you want them, you have to pull all the stops. It's not really anything, but it's just like, yeah, well, it's just, yeah. There are ROM hacks out there. You'd be able to like patch a Pokemon game to make it more like you can catch all of them in one game. But it is still, it is fun, but it is a nostalgic thing, training with your friends in it. Or you can just basically get two Game Boy Colors, get a Link cable, and just do it that way.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Old-fashioned way.
Oh, yes.
Back in our day, there was no wireless connections. We had a cable, and that's all we had back in our day.
Yeah.
So anyway, what would you recommend this game to anybody, Andrew?
If you're into RPGs and stuff, and of course, you had a really good I'll certainly recommend giving this one a go. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the most popular games on the Game Boy, and it was really, really good fun. Because the thing is, at the time, I wasn't actually into Pokemon at the start. Because, I mean, the first time I heard about it was when my mate started playing this trading card game. I thought, yeah, what is this rubbish? Yeah, and I'd seen one or two episodes of the anime, and I thought, this is a bit rubbish. But then again, I was probably watching the 4Kids version. but eventually, I actually first played it on an emulator. Because my dad managed to download an emulator, Game Boy emulator. And one of the games I had was Pokemon Yellow. I thought, you know, I'll give this a go. So it's a really, really good fun game. And in fact, eventually later on, I actually bought the cartridge.
Because when Pokemon came out, I was about 10 years old, and I always wanted the Pokemon game. So the first Pokemon game I actually got was actually Pokemon Blue, but actually the funny thing is, my friend's dad at work had Pokemon Blue, but we kind of traded it for Legend of Zelda, Link's Awakening, so... Yeah. It was kind of worth the trade. So, I would highly recommend Pokemon as well. If you want a good Game Boy game, I highly recommend it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, anyway, pretty much talked as we can about Pokemon, really. Yeah. Right? Thank you to all our listeners. And now let's just get Malcolm and Tony back to finish off the show.
Right, well, thank you guys for a good look on the Pokemon games.
Yep.
So, childhood memories come flooding back to that one, but mind you, I was a teenager at that point. So, round up. Oh, this is the bit you guys have been waiting for, the iTunes reviews.
Yes.
Okay, so, right, first of all, we've basically had one negative and one practically useless one.
Yep.
Okay? One from... I'll go over these and I'll go over this quickly. One from The Syrup. Retarded mental idiots. Why, thank you very much. This is, must be what RMI stands for, because the poor excuse for a podcast sounds like it's been made by a bunch of window lickers who have been let out the local funny farm for the day. Avoid. Right. As far as I'm concerned, I will speak for this one. I don't appreciate terms like that being used, yeah? For anybody who listens to our show and may have missed what we mentioned in this thing, half our podcast team are actually autistic. They both suffer from what's known as Asperger's syndrome.
Yes.
Which is Will and Andrew.
Yes.
Okay? They are extremely brave for what they do. And me and Mal decided that they were worthy to give them a chance, and that's why we brought them into the Retro Resistance podcast, and this is why we have them on their team, because we put a firm belief that anybody could do anything when they have put their right mind to it, and Andrew and Will are perfect examples of that.
And I think it's like a stereotype as well, or people's lack of knowledge on the subject, that just assume that autism is basically... you know, the worst case, which is not, it's totally different things. Not all people that are autistic are, you know, got Down syndrome or retarded or anything like that. It's a totally different thing, but a lot of people's ignorance to it don't know the difference.
Exactly, and also my son was also diagnosed with ADHD, which is another form. So, if anyone say that I don't understand, trust me, I understand it a lot better. So if anyone wants to be cynical in that way, we ain't going to take it lightly. But if you're autistic and you are listening to our podcast, please come to our site. You'll be welcome with open arms.
Exactly.
Okay. And our second review from Mr. Richard Ellis, 1974. Thoroughly disappointed. Okay. I was hoping for an informative take on the modern and retro gaming scene. Instead, this effort sounds like a bunch of inane 16-year-olds rambling at the back of the bike sheds, full of unnecessary expletives and unintelligible babble, as a show it has neither content, depth, grain of professionalism. If you're serious about gaming, avoid this. Well, let me just put a few of these points. One, we're not professionals.
No.
Yeah? We never claim to be, and we never will be.
This is our job. We have other things to do. This is not our main job. We do this for fun and in our free time.
Yeah, and it neither has content or depth. Well, hold on, our show's always over an hour plus. I'm pretty sure we've got enough content to keep it going for that long.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as it goes for depth, well, they say unintelligible babble. I'm pretty sure when we was going over Black Ops, we was actually pulling out all the points. We was putting a lot of points in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, about this. So to say it's unintelligible is either one of two things. Either you're not listening to our podcast, or we've just upset a fanboy.
Yes.
Mm. And that brings immature 16-year-olds. To quote David Brent from The Office, young at heart.
Definitely.
Yeah. And besides that, I'm 37.
Yeah, I'm 33.
I'm 24.
Yeah, and I'm 26.
Exactly. So... We're still young at heart, and for anyone else listening, if you think that we're going to be a podcast that's going to suck up to the big names and everything like that, we're not.
No.
You're going to hear our opinions. If we think a game is great, we'll say that we think a game is great. If a game we think sucks, we'll tell you it sucks. We can't say fair in that, because our last podcast proved it when we went over Borderlands.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was true.
Hmm.
Okay. But on the negative side, we want to thank everybody who is listening to the podcast and who is enjoying the show.
Yep.
I do apologise for that little dark part there. but like I say, if you do enjoy the show, please leave us a review on iTunes, whether it's good or bad. Like we say, we'll mention them all on this one. We could take criticism. It's the only way we're going to get better.
Yeah.
On that side. And it also gives us a chortle, especially people like The Syrup, who make an absolutely no contribution to saying whether the podcast was better or worse. Yep. Okay, let's move on. Happy time! Right. Sounds so enthusiastic, Will. Yep, happy time. Because Mal's just described to him, and also I did, I want to give a shout out to Polar Ventress. If you like your old school game reviews, especially on the Commodore 64, I do recommend you go give him a subscribe and go check out his stuff. So, yep, we'll also include him on the site. Anyone else, any good that you've found out?
Not that I can think of.
No, nothing at the moment?
Only as I say that, Paula Ventress, I'll say the name right eventually. I was really impressed with his videos and that. As I say, I subscribed. I've actually seen him comment on Boneway's videos before, but I've never looked on his channel. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's true. Also, Random Stoke.
Yeah.
We give those guys a call out.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I've seen their videos by accident. And I've watched pretty much all of them. I like the reviews they do on the budget PS2 games by a company.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, are all total shite.
Yeah. So to the Random Stoke, if you're listening to us, guys, good work. And hopefully we may want to pull you along to our website. We mentioned it at the start, we'll mention it again. It's www.rmifusion.com. Please sign up, come and enjoy our videos, come leave some comments and join our forum and let's have a good old chat about games. That's how it goes. Other podcasts were the usual. Listen to the Gamer Dads as well, the Retro Asylum, also the Continue Cast, and we'll give on the Rocks a shout because they're probably some of our favourite podcasts. And they're definitely worth a listen to. They're all available on iTunes, so you can't miss them.
Yeah.
Also, I want to say hello to the Podomatic community as well.
Hello
out there. If you're listening to us and you don't have an iTunes account, please leave comments on our podcast and we'll read them out just like an iTunes review. And I would also like to say hello to the Spreaker community. We'll be putting our podcast on there for you to listen to as well. So for anybody who's listened to us from Spreaker, hello there. Please keep listening and please leave us comments.
What's Spreaker,
so we can.
Then?
Spreaker's the one which the Odd Pod uses.
Yeah, I never
knew that.
Yep, so we're expanding our forte.
Yay.
As far as so we're coming to get you, basically.
I've got to make a shout out to Dan actually, because I've got to record a little segment for his podcast.
Oh, that's true.
Yep.
So we get us.
Yeah, so I'll be able to plug in to plug us in.
Yep, that'll be cool and that'll be awesome. Okay, so thank you for everybody. What have we got next week? Oh, we've got Team Fortress 2 and Doom lined up.
Yay!
Well, not this week, next fortnight. So the old and the new style shooters. Let's see if anything fared better than how we actually grilled Black Ops into the ground. Right, I've been Tony.
I've been Andrew.
I've been Mark.
I've been Will.
And you've been listening to the Iron Man Fusion Cast, and have a good night. Show starting in 3, 2, 1. Hello everyone and welcome back to the RMI Fusion Cast, where we sit here and we talk about games.
We lost you. Oh dear.
I'm beginning to hate you lot.
Yeah.
Let's try this game. Okay, right. Yeah, but I know I'm looking forward to it. Malk?
He's bugging off,
mate. Sorry about that. I just got a fucking silly text message off some. Every time you try and record something, you get people fucking interrupt you.
Right, so how am I going to do this? Ah, you've caught me on the fly.
And then call back.
No, it's okay. Can you remember it goes to the file? I could just separate it from the file anyway.
You're going to have to fucking proper edit this one, though, Tony, this week.
Right, it's supposed to be Charles' play, so they say.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been Tony.
I've been Mark.
Fuck. Do that again, sorry.
Okay, I'll start again. Okay. Thank you.